Welcome to the Joy of Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Dr. James Taylor. On this podcast, we explore the passion and purpose of leadership. Join us to explore lessons in leadership that demonstrate how you can live in the center of God's will. All right, it is great to have Autumn Bailey Ford on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you here. So you are in a rapidly growing industry, yes. Particularly in Georgia,
yes.
With film production. And So I would love to hear just a little bit. You are a producer.
Yes.
And you have produced more than 48 films?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So you know, you don't look nearly tired enough to have done all of that. But hey, I'd love to hear what are some of the big shows that you've already been working on?
I did the Maynard Jackson documentary. Who the airport's named after.
Right.
I did a project called On a Wing and a Prayer, starring Dennis Quaid. It was produced by myself and Miss Roma Downing.
Okay.
I'm very excited about that one. You can catch it on Amazon Prime.
Okay, cool.
As well as a documentary called Broken Chains.
Okay.
So yes, just to name a few.
Okay. And so talk to us a little bit about you're a producer.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us a little bit about kind of the process of producing, like all of the different parts. We were walking down here and I was just hearing some of the different pieces of what a producer does. Mm-hmm. There are so many different jobs that really the students that are listening, the folks that are listening, there are so many different jobs in the film industry that are really great jobs, like really opportunities. But walk us through just a little bit about what happens. Mm-hmm. How do you take a film from an idea to actual production?
Well, for me, I'm a creative producer as well as a physical producer.
Okay.
And as my husband likes to say, I have primenesia. And what that means is I'm buying at least 10 to 15 books a week off of Amazon to see if I can turn something into a movie, because you just never know. And with that, I read a lot. I'm probably reading about 20 scripts a week, people are sending me, or I might do a post like, hey, I'm looking for an inspirational movie. I'm looking for a movie I can do in South Africa, or different things like that. So when you're producing, especially for a creative producer, it comes with a lot of reading, and it's like a puzzle. You got to put things together.
Okay. And talk to us more about the puzzle pieces. So you take this idea, you're a voracious reader.
Yes.
What are the steps involved? I mean, there's funding, there's all those different pieces, and you handle everything. And that's normal for a producer?
Yes. Okay. Yes, for a creative producer, it is normal.
Okay, so tell us kind of what else goes into that.
Well, for me, I like to find a story. Like, let's bring, for instance, Eric's story that works at Hebron. Right. You know, found him, spoke with him about his journey and his story, and I was like, hey, I would love to turn it into a movie. So with doing that, getting the person's permission first if it's a true story. Then once you have that, then you find a writer to be able to write the script for you. Giving notes, like we're on draft like 8, you know, being able to just go through and make sure it's, and once it's ready, then we're able to go out and find the financing or maybe a production partner that'll come on board. And then once you're in active, as we like to say, pre-production, then that's when it goes to finding the director as well as putting a cast and crew together with it.
And your role then is to find every single part of that.
Pretty much, yes.
And do you have just a pool of people that you, have you worked with a lot of the same people on all
like
of the films?
I like to work with a lot of the same people because we have a rhythm, but sometimes, you know, I do bring in new people. It just depends on the project.
How do you get big name talent? Like, you've had some pretty big names involved with you. What does that look like?
It's always the budget.
Okay.
You know, but it's going to always depend on the budget and the type of story as well. You know, for like On a Wing and a Prayer, we did that for about $20
million. Okay.
And to go after somebody amazing as Dennis Quaid, you know, he had to really like the script as well.
Okay.
You know, because Dennis is not just, as we say, a domestic actor. He's also an international actor. So people, you know, love him all over the world.
And so you're contacting agents, you're handling that whole piece.
Yes.
Now, Georgia has been really big in the film industry as of late. Talk to us a little bit, kind of the reasons for that. Why is it that we are such a big state?
I like to say our amazing tax credits.
Okay.
You know, we get 30%. Anything you shoot over $500,000, and that fits, like, I'm not talking about $499,000. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about $500,000. Anything over that, you get 30% expenditure that's spent in the state of Georgia. So a lot of people like that.
So they get, so the film company will then get that back to them. And they get back a 30% revenue off of that.
Yes.
So you put together a $20 million film.
Yes.
You're getting 30% back.
That is correct.
No kidding.
Yes.
Okay. So that just changes the whole budget and then on everything.
Yes.
And now, let's talk a little bit about how you got into this. And so I would love to be able to hear what is it that prompted you to be involved in this early on?
Well, growing up, you know, I like to play outside a lot, but at the same time, I love watching movies to this day. My husband, like, what are you doing? He already knows. I'm laying in our theater. We have a movie theater at our house. I'm just watching all kinds of movies. And I grew up on Shirley Temple movies, you know, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby. And I always said I wanted to do that, but I wanted to do it behind the scenes and putting everything together. I'm like, I've never wanted to be an actor or an actress. I'm like, that's not me. I just always was a type to put things together. And I'm a good networker. So I was like, that's my strong suit. And I can use that and make good movies.
When you went through for college, you did communications and philosophy.
Yes.
And even at that point in time, where was that bug? Like from childhood on?
Yes.
It really was. Okay.
Yeah, I would say really when I turned 8 years old.
Okay.
I fell in love with movies.
A lot of our audience are young. A lot of younger people, just because of where we do it through the school.
Right.
If students wanted to get into this field, what type of advice would you give to them?
I always say read. Okay. Just you got to be an avid reader, especially if you want to be a producer. Okay. I spent my time at the library a lot just reading just different books and, you know, as well as educating myself on the art of filmmaking. Okay. And then also watching a lot of TV to really understand the backstory and the history of cinema.
When you're producing something, are you there even at the filming? Like, are you? So you are. You really do take it from all the way through.
Yes.
And so as you get this idea, you're a voracious reader. Right. You're reading scripts. You're reading books, seeing if you can turn them into a play. If you do get the book and you love that, you're having somebody then write the script
that
for
is
you.
Correct. Finding a screenplay.
Okay. And then you find the actors. You find the money. Yes. Probably the money comes first after the idea.
Bring on a casting director and things like that. Okay. And once you bring on a casting director, the producer as well as the director, we work with them to go out to the different talent that we want if we don't have a personal relationship with that talent ourselves.
Fascinating. And then you're there for the filming, and then you also handle distribution as well?
Yes, when it's done. And I always tell people distribution is very important. One of my mentors said anybody can make a movie. It's about taking a movie out and selling it, whether you're going through festivals, understanding that, the marketing and packaging, and really putting it out there for the world to see.
Okay. What does that look like as far as distribution? Like, you're talking about festivals. Mm-hmm. How do you even get onto like a Netflix?
It's about relationships. I always tell people, make sure you have relationships, as well as the movie's good and you get into a film festival and you might have an executive that's there that's able to watch your movie and they might give you an offer there, you know, on the spot. It just really just depends.
When you look at like On a Wing and a Prayer, really large production, is that the largest ones that you've done with a $20 million budget?
Yes, so far.
And so when you're handling that, where did they film that?
We filmed that actually here in Georgia.
You did?
We did it out in Covington.
Okay.
We rented out an old warehouse and we shot the plane there. We got the plane flew in from Vegas.
Yeah.
We built the body and everything out in Covington, and then we shot around Covington at the different houses and the parks.
And are you even handling locations and things like
that as
well?
We hire a locations manager for that, but I am working with the director to make sure it coincides with the script.
So balancing out and any great stories from working with, I mean, those are some big name actors.
Yeah.
Were they easy to work
they
with?
They were. You know, John Travolta was great. He liked to dance a lot. I always tell people he danced. Shania Twain, when I worked with her, she sung on set. They were good people to be around. Because, you know, you watch them, and especially, I'm like, John Travolta, I loved him in Grease. I'm like, oh my God, you know. And so to be able to meet him and to just be in his presence and just get advice, even as a producer, and talk to him and him telling us and, you know, about him flying his planes and things like that. And at that time, you know, his wife was living, and being able to meet his wife, and she was an actress. And talk to her about her journey. It's a blessing to be able to get those type of experiences.
Yeah. How about Roma Downey and those guys?
Oh, I love Roma. You know, I actually have another production company with her stepson, Mark Brunette's son, called Prominent Productions, and we're in year 6 of our company.
Okay, so I didn't realize Mark Brunette's is Roma's stepson?
No, Mark Brunette and Roma have a stepson named Cameron Brunette.
I did not know that. Okay.
So, and we have a production company together. And we did two movies part of that production company. We just did a movie called A Bridge with Neil McDonough that we shot here in Georgia last spring that we're in post on.
And so right now, how many films are you kind of active with?
Ooh, about say 15.
Is it really?
Yes, 15 active, because it's called development.
Okay.
You know, you're putting everything in development and you just hope for one to stick and to go. because you just never know.
And so you're always kind of in that mix with 10 to 15 things that are going?
Just on different calls, talking to different writers during the day. I'm usually up by 3 a.m. on calls in London and South Africa. So yeah, just it's a lot to manage.
But of those 10 or 15, how many of those will actually get fully produced?
You just never know. You just on a wing and a prayer. You just, as I say, you just really never know.
And so you do all of the work on the front end, hoping that something will get picked up. What are the big contingencies to that? Like, does it all come down to funding?
Normally it comes down to funding and sometimes the actors. Okay. Because sometimes the funding wants to know, what actors do you have? And some of the actors sometimes don't know, do you have the funding for us to engage? So it really just depends. Mm.
And of the, when you're looking at a $20 million production, is a huge portion of that going to the actors, or
actually just really just depends. Like on our film, it was very visual effects heavy. So we had that, we had to build a plane, and then then the actors. But my main thing is, at least for my productions, I try to put as much as I can into the story, that way you can see it on the screen.
Okay.
You know.
Are you dealing with pretty famous writers as well?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because I like to give people opportunities. So a lot of the projects that I deal with are independent. Okay. And even the project, when you think of On the Wing and a Prayer, which was a $20 million movie, it was a Georgia writer who came to me because I put a post. I was like, hey, I'm looking for a faith inspirational movie. He ended up sending me the script. I fell in love with it. I ended up sending it to MGM. And MGM was like, we love it. And Roma Downing, she was a part of MGM at the time. It had a production company called Lightworkers. And they came on board and we did it as a partnership.
No kidding. So, And so that it all comes about by you just putting a post out.
Yeah, sometimes,
And that's where it starts.
Yes.
Fascinating.
And I like to do that a lot because I like to give people opportunities that might not, especially here in Georgia, that normally wouldn't have the opportunities that they would have if they lived in Hollywood.
Right. What are some of the other things that are important to you as far as really promoting, obviously you're promoting a lot of faith films.
Yes.
What are some other themes that you tend to stay
with? I love comedy.
Okay.
I'm doing a big comedy IP that will be announced soon that I'm excited about, as well as thrillers. But I like to do thrillers that are something like on the verge of like Get Out, something that makes sense, something that's fun. I would never do anything demonic or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I want people to be able to go to the theater and, get the inspirational side of autumn, as I like to say, the funny side, and then you get the little scary side. Like now I'm searching for scripts because I want to do a movie on Lake Lanier, because every time I turn around, it's always something.
Right. Yeah.
And I was talking to a friend of mine that works at Blumhouse, and he was like, yeah, we were down in Georgia shooting the movie, and everybody was like, let's go to Lake Lanier. And I remember I talked to a friend that was from Georgia, and they told me no. And then so they ended up calling me. I was like, yeah, you might not want to go, So all of a sudden I was like, yeah, that's so fascinating. I was like, I might come back to you with a movie.
I'm out on Lake Lanier all the time. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. They do say out on Lake Lanier, and I've tried to get to it myself, but they say that there's one section that you can actually snorkel down because, they flooded that area.
Yes.
And there are two towns, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Oscarville, I think it's called. Yeah.
And, but you can apparently snorkel down to the church steeple of this, so... I couldn't get there. But fascinating. So you're going to be trying to tell a story.
Yeah,
about
so I'm looking.
Well.
I've been interviewing writers for the past 6 months. I have not found a script yet, but I'm actively looking.
Okay, take me back to when did you make your first film?
Wow, the first movie I did was in 2009, and that movie was called The Prodigal Son. And it was a faith. It was a faith movie.
Okay.
So, yes.
And who did you work with on that?
We didn't have any big actors in that one.
Okay.
I was associate producer on that one, and with associate producers, like I'm just start coming up.
Okay.
I'm still learning and putting the pieces together for myself. So to be able to work on that project and to get educated and learn, it was a good experience for me.
When you finished your undergraduate degree, what were you doing then? Did you launch right into film, or were you doing other pieces?
No, I did both.
Okay.
I have a love to give back and to help people. So I was doing mentorship far as like a social worker to help students that that had come from broken homes that really didn't have like a mother or a father in the same home. So I would like a big brother, big sister type of program where we would go out, take them out, talk to them about education, talk to them about life skills and different things like that. So I did that for about 6 months as I was, transitioning into the full-time film and TV.
And so just 6 months doing social work and then right into film.
Yes.
And did you work for someone else during that period of time, or were you already independent?
I was myself.
You were. Yes. So you really.
Yeah.
And did you set up your own company at that point in time?
My own LLC, did everything.
No kidding.
The book that really did it for me was my mentor to this day of over 15 years is Devon Franklin.
Okay.
You know, he wrote a book called Produced by Faith.
Okay.
And that book, I always say, changed my life to always make me want to do faith-based inspirational movies first.
Yeah, so interesting. Now, is that part? That's part of the Franklin family. Like
no,
that's
no
the Devon Franklin. Is that part of the Franklin? Like the singers, the producers?
No, he's
no,
just
different
a producer, and he's a pastor.
Okay.
So he did Heaven Is For Real was one of his movies. He did Breakthrough as well.
Okay. So, and so that's really your mentor that got you into the industry.
Far as I mean, when it comes because
it's
to
just
faith,
you're coming out of
journey.
College as a 20 something.
Yeah.
The idea of you jumping in but, 6 months later into something
seems
wild.
It took a little minute, but reading that book really opened my eyes to say I always wanted to do movies anyway. That's always what I wanted to do, but it was my journey to faith movies.
Okay.
You know, how I want it to be perceived in the industry
right.
and things like that. So, yes.
Do you find that subject when you're producing faith-based mm-hmm. movies, which the vast majority of yours mm-hmm. are, when you're doing faith-based movies, is that hard to get produced? Do you find a lot of conflict? You know, the world's getting darker, mm-hmm. and
right.
I'm frankly, it's why I'm actually so intrigued right. with you because you're right. bringing real light into the world.
Right.
Is that a tough subject?
I would say no.
Okay,
it's definitely for me. It's actually easier to get a inspirational faith movie done than it is to get a comedy thriller done because people want to see love, they want to see joy, you know. But at the same time, they do want to laugh, but they also want to see some type of positive outlook on life. You know, and I know I do.
Right.
So you know, that's what I want to be able to give to people.
So one of the crux of our show here mm-hmm. is the idea of looking at people who are really focusing on faith for their lives, mm-hmm. that you're going to live with a faith-based life.
Mm-hmm.
You're incredibly successful, mm-hmm. And yet you've never watered down your own personal faith. Mm-hmm. And so take me back to the mm-hmm. beginning. Where are you from?
Okay.
Tell me what that early childhood looked like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when did that spark take place for films?
Well, I'm originally from, I was born in New York.
Okay.
Raised in York, Pennsylvania by my aunt, my great aunt, who's my grandmom's sister. She's 95 now, still living. She's in Pennsylvania. She got me when I was 3 weeks old.
Okay.
And I always say my faith journey came from her because I shouldn't be here. You know, I always say every day is my birthday, and I'm just very thankful to be on this earth because my birth mother, she put me in a trash can because she didn't want me anymore because I was came out too dark for her, as they say. And she was a prostitute, and she was on drugs. My father also was on drugs, and just they were in that life. And when my aunt, you know, came and got me at 3 weeks old, I always say she was my guardian. To this day, she's my guardian angel. And she's the only woman I ever called mom. And I'm just very thankful for her. So with her growing up, we was in church every Sunday. We were just doing community service, feeding the homeless, just doing different things. And even when everybody else counted me out, oh, you're just going to be like your mom, you know, pregnant and like your dad, having all these kids. My dad had 18 kids by different women and things like that. And I was a virgin, so I got married at age 26. And I went to college. And as they say, I defeated the odds because of my aunt, because she poured into me. And she had me in church, and she had me saying, God is your best friend, and that's who you know. And I was like, I came from, you know, a mother that didn't want me, a father that lived that life, you know, I wanted better for myself. So film was my outlet. I always tell people, I don't drink, I don't smoke. My drug and my liquor is making movies, and that's how I get high. You know, it's just giving and also giving back to other people.
Right.
So I always say, I'm just blessed to be here. And so my faith journey comes from my story, and I'm in the process of writing book to be able to, you know, to uplift other people to say, yeah, I'm here now, but my journey was not easy. You know, this is what it took me to get here, you know, and that's why I say I owe it to God to be able to give back in a way to tell these stories that are meaningful, that are purposeful for people to really understand.
How did your aunt know to come get you?
That to this day, she says she does not know. She
really?
Said she says God, and then it was another voice that told her, because she always wanted a daughter, because she had two sons that she actually outlived. You know, her last son passed away about 2 years ago, you know, from COVID. And she was like, you know, I always wanted a daughter, and I never was able to have a daughter. So God brought you into my life, and I'm just very thankful for her.
Unbelievable. You know. And so is she just as optimistic? Like, is that where you get your optimism
she is.
From?
She definitely yeah. is. Her and her sister is 105, still living, got 105. Her memory. My Aunt Bernice still living,
You've
got her
good
memory.
Genes.
I'm praying that I live that long. Lord knows I am.
Wow.
You know, and my grandma, unfortunately, she passed in 2001 at the age of 84.
Okay.
But, you know, her
she was
sisters,
just a kid.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, compared to my Aunt Bernice, I tell you, you know,
no
so,
kidding.
So yeah, she was born 1918 and I think my Aunt Bernice was born 1920.
Wow.
So yeah, so around
wow.
that time. So I'm just thankful for life.
Right.
And everybody was like, well, Autumn, we don't know what to celebrate for you when your birthday comes. Cause every day I'm like, it's just, you know, just say, hey,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
I'm just glad to be here.
When you're going through elementary school, middle mm-hmm. school, high school, mm-hmm. Were you already thinking about films and
I was.
Things? You were.
I was. It's funny. I was a homecoming queen in college and high school. And because I used to, as they say, tell everybody's business. I was like the Oprah. I had the fake camera crew in the background, and I had my stick of deodorant as my mic, and just on the step, just running my mouth. And at that time, they thought I was going to be like a talk show host. I'm like, no, I'm going to do the behind the scenes, but I just like being nosy, you know. So I just did it for the fun of it, you know. And I was in performing arts, and then during performing arts, you know, I would run all the stage plays and do production and things like that. Like, I came to one of you guys' productions last year, which was phenomenal, which was the Newsies.
Right.
Because that's one of my favorite Disney, you know, movies. So being able to watch that, it just took me back in time when I was back there running the soundboard and doing the lights and stuff in high school.
Our middle school is
so,
doing
yeah.
Aladdin this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so if you want tickets, you just tell me.
Okay.
So, awesome. Well, that's really neat. So even at that early age, you really
yeah.
saw that
yes.
spark.
Yes.
Now, when you were doing the productions in high school, mm-hmm. you were behind the scenes
yes,
there, or were
yes.
you acting as well?
No, never did acting.
No
don't
kidding.
Want to.
Okay.
So, no, let me see. I did a movie called Tulsa once, a faith movie called Tulsa. We shot up in Augusta in 2017, and I was a choir member in a choir robe. I was like an extra, and I was like, yeah, this is not for me.
No
you
kidding.
Know?
But
so,
I mean,
yeah.
you're a pretty gregarious
so,
person.
So,
like,
yeah.
you've got definitely an extrovert personality,
so,
but
so,
that
yeah.
never held
no,
any interest.
And I tried it, and I was like, yeah, that was one and done for me.
Okay.
So yeah, I liked behind the scenes,
yeah, yeah.
running the boards and stuff like that is what I did when
right.
I was in high school.
So networking must be a really big component of
yes,
what you do.
It
then.
Is.
It's just
it is.
Introducing, meeting people. Mm-hmm. You are overtly positive, which I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of bringing that mindset, that's that networking must be crucial.
Yes, I always tell people it's all on who you know, especially in this industry. When I first moved to Georgia, July of 2008, and I think the tax credits passed in October of 2008. So I was, as I like to say, I came up with the Georgia industry as they were trying to put everything together. And so it was big on networking. I ended up starting a networking mixer called Get Connected, which I did for 10 years. The last one stopped. Right the January when COVID happened during that year. And what Get Connected was, it was for people in the film and television industry. I got about 700 people that came a month to it. It was $10 the last Thursday of the month. And with that $10, the money that I raised, I never profited off of it. I helped actors be able to apply to film school to pay for headshots. I helped filmmakers apply to film school as well and to submit their films in different film festivals and things like that, as well as the first Saturday of the month, we would go down on Peachtree Street and feed the homeless. So that's what I did with that. Because my thing was, if God can bless me in the industry, this is my calling to give back. So that's where the proceeds from that. And then I created the Georgia Entertainment Gala. And with the Georgia Entertainment Gala, I was able to raise over $500,000 in 5 years to different charities, as Hosea Feed the Hungry, Serve International, Bethune-Cookman Elementary School, Angels Among Us, just different charities throughout the state of Georgia to be able to give back, as well as help filmmakers, again, apply to film school and things like that, as well as honor people like the amazing Ted Turner, Will Packer, just to name a few.
And so have you ever been tempted to go into Los Angeles or anything like that?
Oh, I'm
like, is that
always in LA?
You are, okay.
You know, at a time and point, I was telling my husband, let's move to LA. He was like, no, I'm happy here in Atlanta. But I do often, before COVID, I was there at least 3 times a month. you know, back and forth. But now with Zoom, I really don't need to go out there that much. You know,
that's what I was wondering with the modern technology that we have now.
Everything is pretty much Zoom. And I still go out if need be, or maybe I go to like a conference and things like that. But as far as meetings and stuff and pitch meetings, it's pretty much Zoom.
Are there certain hubs in our country and in the world that you have to be at? To be in this industry?
Right now, no.
Okay.
As of now, as long as you're able to understand production, it's pretty much worldwide travel, you know, and you can be here in Georgia and do okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be in LA,
right.
You know, but now the way the industry is going, you know, it's a little at a standstill. So people are traveling more now, like to Canada and to London and different places like that. So definitely need to go, you know, across the pond or even South Africa. Like I'm doing business over there now as well.
Okay. And are there any other places that are doing the tax credits?
Yes, a lot of places. There are. You know, the movie I'm doing in London has, I want to say, 40%. You know, Malta has, you get an extra 10 over there, plus more. You have South Africa has, a rebate and a credit. So it's just different places. They have Singapore, Malaysia, all over. You know, Doha is in the process of trying to figure it out. You know, I was invited by Belize last year, which I think I mentioned, I just got some land in Belize because they invited me like, hey, we want to bring the film community here. You know, can you talk to us about tax credits and how to get, you know, engaged in building the industry here? So a lot of countries are definitely starting to do it as well.
What's the motivation for the countries? Like, what's the motivation for the
tourism,
the state?
The tourism as well as the credit, and also for people to be able to do, you know, buy on goods and stuff like that, from my understanding, what I was told.
So just because of the sheer number of people who are coming in with the film industry,
people
see the state, they fall in love with the state, they may end up living there,
or
just where the film is made. And so people say, well, I want to go visit that spot. Okay. I was we lived in Savannah for 15 years prior to this, and it was a huge town for film. Like, it seemed like.
Definitely. It was scary.
Yeah. One section of downtown was forever closed down, you know, over films, it felt like, you know.
That's awesome.
And so those credits, and how do they work for the state? I mean, literally, you can purchase tax credits, and then they're just given.
Sell them, and you can buy them for, you know, anywhere between, on the low, if I'm not mistaken, you know, 80 cents on the dollar, and then on the high, 92 cents on the dollar. You know, so it just really just depends. And sometimes people might pre-sell the tax credits before the movie is even, you know, made, to be able to get that money to be able to make the movie.
So a company can do that.
Yes.
A company can purchase the tax credits, and then that actually reduces their tax liability.
Yes. Now, getting to all that technically, I don't know.
Right.
I usually send that to a company, and the company handles that for whoever the buyer is and all that stuff. So I just make sure the receipts and everything adds up and everybody's getting the proper due.
And you finish out, the movie for $20 million. Mm-hmm. At the end of that, you're just getting $6 million because there's a 30%.
Well, I'm not.
I mean, I know you're not, but the film is.
Correct. Whether the credit's going to the studio that did it or the independent investor that financed it.
Right.
Yes.
Awesome. Let's take a moment then, and let's talk about your faith. How did you come to know the Lord?
I would say my aunt.
Okay.
As I said, at a very young age, I was in church. I want to say, goodness, it felt like every day, the way, you know, every day we were in church, because she was a deacon.
Okay.
And, you know, and she prided herself in the Lord and knowing the Lord, and just me watching her faith journey, and just her always telling me, as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, if you don't have nobody in your life, you know, other in your life, you always have God. And if you ever feel alone, you need somebody to talk to, you get on your knees and you pray and you talk to Him. And that's what I do. And that's what, for me, how my faith journey came, is just getting on my knees and just praying.
Right.
And I think I was like at 7 at the time, and I was like, Mom, I'm talking to Him, but I'm not hearing anything back. You know, what's going on? She was like, keep praying. Mm-hmm. She was like, you will hear it. And then as I got older, I started to hear. And I was like, I'm glad. I'm like, I need this. I need Him in my life. And I've just been very thankful to have Him. You know, and it was a time that I was, I didn't want to have kids. And I don't know if I mentioned this. I have a son now, he's 2 and a half. And I had him at, I was 38 when he was born. And in 4 days, I turned 39. Yeah. So to some people, they're like, Autumn, you wait all that time. And even when I told my mom, she was like, I'm almost 100 years old and now you want to have a baby. I was like, but it's okay. We're going to take every day, you know, and we're just going to be thankful for it. And, you know, but I just was like, I just didn't want a baby, because I was like, what I grew up with, far as not having a mom, a real mom, birth mom, and a dad, I was like, can I love somebody when I didn't feel that love and it wasn't there for me? You know, it just felt like a void. And then my husband, I knew he always wanted kids, and he was like, well, it's your decision. I'm going to love you no matter what. But God had other plans, and I'm just very thankful now to be a mom. And I always tell, I tell him, you know, which I didn't have. It's like I tell him too much. I can't say too much, but every time I say, I love you, I love you, I love you, you know, because I never received that, you know, from my birth parents. And I was like, I want to be the best mom that I can be. But at the end of the day, I know I'm not perfect and I'm going to make those mistakes. But when you have somebody like God on your side, you know, in my mind, I'm like, he's leading me through the path of to be the best mom that I can be and to give him things that I, you know, that I never had. You know, so I'm very thankful for that.
Big lessons to be learned with parenting.
Yes, it is. And even now I always say every day, because my birth mother, I want to say she passed away at 35.
Did you keep a relationship with her at all?
When I was young, when I seen her, I seen her. When she seen me, but it wasn't the best relationship. Again, I'm a child. Right. You know, she passed when I was 12.
Okay.
And, you know, seeing her, it wasn't me. You know, I'm the child in the situation. She just didn't like me because I was just a couple shades darker than what she was. And that does happen, you know, colorism within the community. And me being a product of that, you know, it just showed me to love all people.
That's right.
You know, I was like, and that's what I'm excited to teach my son, you know, no matter the color of your skin, you you love everybody.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, my birth mother, I have, you know, she burned me with an iron because she wanted to make me light skin, you know, and to be able to say at the age of 8, I got burned with the iron and say, oh, well, you're always going to have that. And it is true. I do have that light part of me because she did that for me. And I just was like, I would never do that to a child, let alone, you know, say things that was said to me when I did visit her. Because I, mind you, I never lived with her.
Right.
But when I did, you know, see her, it was always, you know, hate in her heart. And I never understood that. And it took me a while, you know, for forgiveness. And even to this day at 41, I think it took me probably 39, right, really writing my book and having them ask me questions, you know, about her and things like that, that really said, you know what, I forgive. I was like, I forgive you. I went, and I think after that session of me writing writing a book with the author, I sit there with my co-author. I sit there. I was like, Lord, you know, it's time. I'm a mom now. You know, I need to let, you know, to release and just let it go. And I still think about the things often, but to me it's a motivation, the things now, and supposed to me just being bought up with anger, with hate,
right.
You know, and it's funny. I at the age of 41, people say, you still see a therapist? I do. And it's for me because it's to talk about, you know, the trauma as well as to talk about the good, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I don't deal with death well because I've been to so many, you know, funerals as a young child. So I always try to say, you know what? God, I thank you. I honor you. And without you, I wouldn't be here. And I just want to be better. And I want my son to have better. And just even on the journey of finding out I was pregnant, I started researching schools and researching just all kinds of things. I was like, I want him to have what I didn't have and what I wish I could have had when I was that age.
We you know? Our school started to get to know you a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like we honestly had kind of thought like, well, she's got one coming in right now, but we still have another year before we get you set.
Another year.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
So it's just about me being proactive.
That's right.
In everything. You know, when I found out I was pregnant, I was calling daycares and stuff like that, interviewing people to make sure it's a fit because, again, it's your child, and, and I'm new to this, and it's like, God, I want you to lead me to where I need to go to make things right, because I know what I wanted as a child. You know, you told me, you know, and you helped guide me because I was not a perfect child. You know, I wouldn't say I was ornery, but I was not the best. And when I say not the best, as in I went to public school, you know, I had perfect attendance, but I was so surprised at that, you know, from first grade to my senior year, because I had to
first
be in
grade
school.
To senior year,
yes,
perfect attendance.
Perfect attendance.
Never missed a day.
Never missed a day.
Wow.
But just because I never missed a day, I still was in trouble. You know, I just was in trouble in school, as in they had what's called, at that time, I think it was called in school suspension.
Right.
So I never was outside, but I was always inside, but, you know, in school. And I said, I don't want that for him. I want him to be around, you know, like-minded individuals that care for him as much as I care for
him.
Right. And I just wanted to start, as I say, his faith journey early.
Right.
You know, getting him baptized at 5 months and having him, you know, meet the Lord and all that stuff. So, and have him be an active, going to church and things like that. So I'm,
you know, there's this misconception, I think, with forgiveness, where a lot of times we think that forgiveness is like a gift for the other individual.
Oh, no.
But forgiveness is so internal.
Oh, God. I always say, you know how you feel? You feel like a weight was lifted off of you. Mm-hmm. I think when I forgave her, more doors started to open.
That's right.
Because sometimes, you know, doors were opening, but I'm saying more doors.
That's right.
And because it's like I had so much anger and so much resentment, you know, towards this lady. And, you know, and they're like, well, why do you have that towards her and not much towards your dad? I was like, well, with my dad, I did see him. And when I did see him, it was, you know, it was what it was. You know, he had his ways about him, but he never, as I say, abused me or talked down to me or did things like that where she did. So again, it took me a while to forgive him, but I forgived him in a different way for other things. But the, what she did was real trauma and it takes a person a long time.
That's right.
And at the end for me to release that anger, to release that hate, it was nothing but it was God. And to this day, I was speaking about her the other day when I mentored this other young lady, and she's having some resentment towards her mom. And I'm there now saying, yeah, I was 12 and, and I understand, but at the same time, that's your mom and she's still here.
That's right.
I was
you like, can my speak birth, into
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I was, yeah. And so that's what I try to do is to try to give back in different ways that was given to me.
That's right.
By,
you know, even as you were talking about that story, you clenched your fists, right? And it really, like that, to me, that's a beautiful picture of what takes place is that when we forgive, we begin to live with open hands, right?
Yes.
And open hands, yes, we release that, but open hands also allow us to receive.
Yes.
And that's really kind of that beauty of forgiveness, working with teenagers for a career. You know, I have walked through a lot of really challenging stories with students. And that's the part, boy, when you forgive, you give that away.
Right.
And those hands come open where now you can receive, which is why I'm fascinated with the idea that once you forgave, you also found that more doors were coming open to you.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I always say, you know, you just never know somebody's story or somebody's, as you say, faith walk. Mm-hmm. You just never know. And that's why I try not to judge people. You know, I try to meet people and understand and get to know them before I really, you know, I guess you say pass judgment, you know, because everybody judges people. It's human nature. But at the same time, as I like to say, is that a good judgment or is it a bad judgment? Mm. And for me, I want to be, you know, I want to have a clear path on, I want to get to know you. Who are you? Just like I want people to know Autumn. Who is Autumn? They want to get to know the real me. I'm an open book. I'm going to give you the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, because I don't believe in fakeness. Mm-hmm. I just want people to either, if you're going to love me, you're going to love me. And if you hate me, I don't know why. And I would like to know why, you know, but I want to get you to try to love me. But at the end of the day, you can't force stuff on people. But for me, I want people to always just feel like they can talk to me. Because even as a producer, you know, I am, as they say, a boss, you know, far as like you work for me. And I want to always have an open door policy. So if something's going on set or you feel uncomfortable or if somebody did something to you or you got talking to a certain way, or even if you're like, if I came to you and talked to you a certain way, please let me know, you know, because I want to correct it. You know, I think for me, I did a movie a couple years ago, and which I don't do this anymore. I said, let's pray. And I didn't know I offended some people by saying that.
Wow.
And, you know, and the guy came to my door and he said, Miss Autumn, can I speak with you? I said, sure. He was like, well, you said, you know, for everybody to pray. And I just wanted to let you know that I didn't appreciate that because, you know, I don't believe in the same thing you believe in. And instantly the left part of me wanted to say some stuff. And then the right part of me, you know, took over and was like, you know, I apologize. I shouldn't have done that. And then I, you know, and we had a good dialogue. And then I went in my office and I said, Lord, I didn't know that was a problem for me to do that. And I was like, you know, I apologize. And I'm up here apologizing to the Lord. I was like, I don't want to offend anybody. And I think I might have made a Facebook post and I basically expressed, you know, what happened. And a lot of people were like, yeah, you know, you can't do that to some people. You know, offend folks. And again, that opened my eyes to say, oh, wow. So now, even when I go to restaurants and I'm out with the executives, you know, that happened as well. I said, you know, I'm a pray and somebody got offended. So now I just say, excuse me, you know, I'm a pray over my food if you don't mind. And sometimes, oh, well, let's all pray. But if they don't say that, you know, I just pray over my food and, I keep it moving. The same with production. You know, I just say, I wish everybody well wishes and we a positive shoot and this, this, and this. And then underlining, I pray over the whole production, you know, myself.
That's
because,
right.
Again, I don't want to offend anybody after, you know, I got caught. No, let's just say called out. Mm-hmm. But again, it was a good call out because at the time I would have kept doing it. But it's very funny that happened. Then I went and did a movie in Tanzania, Africa, and I did a post and a video where that's everybody prayed. They made sure you didn't step on set unless you prayed. And I just was like, it's very different, you know, in the States. And they were like, why? And I told them the story. They was like, oh no, we must pray to God. And I was like, good to know. Mm. So, you know, it was good to see something, you know, that I loved, you know, that they do internationally, where I wouldn't have thought that they would do that.
Right. So many of your films are faith-based.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's so intriguing. I mean, this is absolutely an expression of your faith.
Yes.
What you do.
Yes.
And so, what are you doing to encourage the next generation? I know that you're really involved in so, I mean, it kind of amazes me how many things you're involved in. But what are you doing to encourage this next generation?
I think for me is just to be able to always have, as I mentioned earlier, an open door to educate filmmakers, up and coming filmmakers, to not feel afraid to go after their dream. Like, I have a lot of students. I'm mentoring two from Savannah that go to SCAD. Mm-hmm. That they, one wants to be a producer, one wants to be a creative executive to work at a studio. And mind you, I've never worked at the studio, but I have a lot of interaction with people that do work at the studios. So being able to mentor them and to find them placement and things like that. So for me, for the next generation, it's just mentorship. Mm-hmm. To really be that person and say, hey, I'm an open book. You know, if you need to talk to somebody, hit me up on LinkedIn, you know, hit me up on, you know, Instagram. I normally 99.9% respond back to you. Mm-hmm. And if I can't help you, I'll find somebody that can help you. Because a lot, I know that was not done for me when I was reaching out to people. You know, it was like very closed off, right, and I had a lot of questions that I couldn't get answered. So that's why I said when I read Devon's book, it opened the door for me. And one thing I was like, I want to be that producer. And that you can't always have access to me, but if you're in school, like high school or college, and you have questions, I want to be able to help you because I didn't receive that help that I thought I should have got. So my thing is, if I can help you,
that's right.
And I always say, if I ever win an Oscar, God, hopefully, you know, I want to thank the people of LinkedIn, because I want to say when I reach out to people on LinkedIn, about probably 95%, you know, respond back. And you know, a lot of my executives that I met, that are now big executives of Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, I met them off of LinkedIn before they were there now, but they remembered who I was. So when I reach out, they're like, oh, sure, Autumn, you're in town, let's have coffee, or let's have this, or you have a project that you're finished, let's figure it out. You know, because they, at the end of the day, they're gonna look for you. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, what you write on social media is very important,
right,
and how
matters.
You present yourself. Yep. It's like a resume.
That's right.
You know, so LinkedIn for me is my resume. Mm-hmm. You know, so people say I'm too preachy on there, but hey, I like to post a lot of positive information for once yourself, because a lot of my audience is people in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, Hollywood can be
dark,
be a dark place, right, if you let it be. And that's why I'm like, for me, I want to show people that it has its good. Mm-hmm. You know, and it is good executives and good producers out there that are willing to help and engage and that do make good stuff. So that's why I try to use my social media platform as like a marketing place to not only just tell my life or what I'm doing with my family, but at the same time, what I'm doing with business and how the people that I care to attract in business from
it. It's increasingly countercultural.
Yes.
You know, as our world is getting darker. And yet here's what I've always, you know, what I've always been amazed at is, you know, since I became a Christian in my senior year in high school, you know, I'm pretty overt with my faith. I'm not a terribly shy guy. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to jump in and, but you know, most people, when your faith is presented with authenticity and without a finger wag, without any judgment,
100%.
You know, it tends to be people are really receptive to that because in many cases, I think people come to, grappling or grasping at faith. Mm-hmm. They come to it with some pretty negative preconceived notions, and you're smashing those notions. I mean, you just are. I love the fact that your career, as you're being able to tell stories through film, you're really providing an authentic witness, you know, to this idea of this kind of dark, you know, kind of the dark world of entertainment and media.
Right.
And yet you're very countercultural in that.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not easy. You know, you get your people, you know, that don't understand, and that's okay. You try your best to educate them and hope for the best. And if not, you know, you just keep moving, you know, because you don't want them to, as they say, dim your light,
right,
or, you know, bring bad energy And for me, it's like I like positivity. That's right. I like calmness. And I just want to make good projects, whether it's faith and inspirational, whether it's a comedy or whether it's a thriller. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just want to make projects that people can get excited about and talk about, you know. So that's my main focus that I'm just thankful. I always tell people God put me here for a reason. And my reason that I think it is to tell stories as well as to give back, you know. And as you mentioned in my bio about philosophy, philosophy for me was to always understand and to help people. And to be a people person. And that's why I was like, you know what? I'm majoring in film and TV, but I also want to minor in philosophy because I want to understand people better. Mm-hmm. That way when I'm interacting with them, you know, we can have a good dialogue, a good conversation, and they can really get to know me and I can really understand who they are. Right. Things like that.
Right. And your husband works in media as well at
CNN?
Yes,
he works at CNN. He's my little, as I like to say, nerd man, because I don't understand nothing about IT and engineering, coding, and whatever he does. But yeah, right. He's been there for about 22 years.
Is he on site in Atlanta? Or
yes,
is he,
he's at... Yeah, he is. At Techwood now, because you know CNN right. closed down, so they moved everything over to Techwood. Yes,
right. Yeah. Autumn, listen, it is such a pleasure to meet with you. I love the fact that you know, we talk about this idea of being in full time ministry, that you get mm-hmm. to be in full time ministry. You're mm-hmm. telling stories yes. that are really edifying, that are faith based, yes. And doing an amazing job at it. I'm also really excited in another year to have your son over here at the school
praying,
on campus.
Yes,
and I'm excited too to have you engage some yes. of our students in the future.
However,
well.
I can help. I know I reached out. I think his name, Miss Walters, introduced me to Chris.
Yes.
I think that's his
yep.
name. I would love to do like a screening of Wing and a Prayer and
right.
you know, talk about it with them. So no. I'm just thankful to be here, and I'm thankful for the invitation, and however I can, you know, help the students and, you know, speak to them or, you know, have them come out on set and, you know, actually experience a real
we
film
would
love
set, that.
You know, the door is always open.
Okay. Yeah. Autumn Bailey Ford. Great to have
you
here on the show.
Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Joy of Leadership podcast. Living in the center of God's will is a rare blessing in today's day and age. Help us share this vital story of passionate leadership. If you would like to comment on the show, or if you know someone who would be a perfect guest, contact us at thejoyofleadership@gmail.com. If you like the show and don't want to miss a single episode, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.